Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us and thank you for your patience today. I'm Nikki and I work for Product School on the marketing team. And today we are being joined by Uche, who is coming from Twitter, director of product management at Twitter, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. Well, today we're really excited to have you here with us in the Product School Pro community to talk about building global products or versus products for all. So I'm not going to take too much of your time, Uche, but I just wanted to let everyone in the audience know that feel free to leave your questions. You can drop them in the chat or you can save them for the end and we'll try to get to as many as we can. All right. Well, I'm going to let you take it away.
Thank you, Nikki.
Hold and share my screen so everyone can see it.
So happy to be here. Hope everyone's having a great Wednesday morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are in the world. So as Nikki said, my name is Uche Adebita and I'm Director of Global Markets at Twitter. Happy to be here today. So I'll get right into it. I have the luxury of talking about global products versus building products for all. And so that's kind of why we're here. And so, you know, I just really want to use this opportunity to share my experience on how to successfully build global products versus shipping products globally, which I think there's a slight nuance there, but it's something to distinguish. So the reason I kind of created the video was to really convey the key elements that we as product managers should consider when building global products. A lot of the time when I hear people say, I'm building a product for everyone, a lot of the time when I hear this, what people are really talking about is building a product for everyone they know, right? Which most of the time is sort of constrained to their market, their group of friends, their, you know, upbringing, you know, their ecosystem. So because of that, this kind of is a lot of what people build in products. They're projecting their purview and thinking on the rest of the world and hoping that through various marketing campaigns or strategies, they can convince people in other regions of the world that they want to use their products to eventually do so, which is an uphill battle if anyone has tried to create product market fit after the product has been built into a different market. Sidebar to this, you know, a lot of people talk about diversity and the need to have diverse teams. Well, as someone who's worked a lot of my career in the global arena, there is an actual tangible benefit of having a diverse team, and that is that these teams tend to be in a better positioned and create a higher probability of capturing the voices of people across the globe. That's why it's super important to have diverse teams, is because there's so much you can extrapolate from, you know, when you go on vacation. It's really good to have people who have lived those experiences at the table when you are designing and visioning this product to really portray the needs of various perspectives for you. So I'm going to use the rest of the time that I have walking through this kind of, it's not a product development cycle, but really stages that I think are important for you to consider as you navigate when you're building your product, especially when you want to build global products versus building a product and then shipping it globally. So we start with who. Right. And so when you think about the who, it's extremely important to understand, number one, that you are not the who. Neither is your mother and neither is your neighbor or your BFF from high school. And so that's why you see in the video, it's very important to have proximity to the actual who's that you need to build this product for. And the ways that I found success in doing so is when you have the ability to either build in market teams of product managers and design and researchers and engineers that can really reflect, the actual intel and insights of what is required in that market, or really striving to partner with people on the ground in those markets to get the data that your team will need to actually understand the who's. There are so many different cultural nuances in a market that it truly would be unwise to believe that you can learn them all on the job, right? Like, for instance, I'm Nigerian. What I know from being a Nigerian and having learnt via cultural osmosis is just not learnable from a book or internet or school. So the first message, which was echoed in the video, is that proximity to the actual people, the actual who's, and understanding them in their environment and having that input is key in building an actual product that is reflective of the global landscape that you want to tap into. And then the next is to really be specific about identifying your user cohorts. It's a very big world, lots of different people with different needs. It really helps if you can really take a stance of empathy to get yourself and your assumptions out the way and get specific about the group of people in each market that your product needs to target. So, Nikki, if you can move to the next slide, please. Okay, so when we look at the what, you know, in terms of when you're building a global product, I cannot stress enough how important research is. I feel like, you know, we look at user research, and I'm specifically not just saying user research or product research, because there are so many multifaceted dimensions of research that could transcend into researching the psychology of the different cohorts you're looking at, their motivations, their intrinsic values. Like, research is such a wide, just a wide area that really needs to be invested in. So I'm going to say it three times: research, research, research. This notion, you know, I see this so many times that people come up with an idea in their backyard, and we get very attached to our ideas as product managers, and then we want to justify why the people across the world need this in their lives. You know, sometimes due to trends and just the influence of the Western world, you could get some usage, but I cannot stress enough how there's nothing like being deliberate about seeking out what the market needs from day one and being intentional about addressing these in the ways people intuitively live their lives in that part of the world. It saves you so many sleepless nights and headaches of trying to go back and retrofit, which is never a great way. You know, each user group are going to have their various needs, and my new favorite word, flavors of how they do life. So flavor meaning like the base is the same, but like, you know, there's just a little bit of customization and tweaking that just makes it that of a much more of a delightful experience for them. So being specific in what you want to target and why is super critical. You know, of course, product managers, we want to solve every problem, right? I see so many times that we want to fulfill all needs, right? But look at Apple. Why is Apple so good? They're very specific, very good at scope control, and they're very good at being what they say they will be entirely and nothing more. So my advice, if you want interoperability, go get Windows, but see how hard it is to get Windows right for everyone. So super important to be specific about the cohort and really research what it is they need and how they need it to show up for them to have a delightful experience. Next slide. So now we come to the how. This is the how. Foundationally, this is where you know whether a team is really building a global product or whether they're building a product and then shipping it globally. Foundationally, when you build globally, things like language, localization, an emulation environment to mimic on-ground conditions should just be a standard part of the development cycle, right? So in my experience, the fact that this is not the case in most companies just further reinforces that we kind of think in our local environment and then we try and ship globally, right? So I like to call this, we need to have infrastructural intelligence, right? When you're figuring out your SLAs, for example, you know, you should be thinking global latency metrics. You should not be thinking, how is this going to work on the East and West Coast of North America only? When you're thinking about application footprint, you know, consider the different parts of the world you want to enter have different data access needs. Data is getting cheaper in India, and so therefore they have the luxury of you know, big update packages or downloads, whereas data is getting more expensive, let's say in a market like Nigeria. And so they really care about how much the update size is consuming and how much battery power you're using. So if you don't consider these things, these will become a barrier to adoption of your app and just a headache to try and retrofit it after the fact. You know, when you're thinking about platforms, right, like we're very Apple iOS focused here in America, but Android is a big player in the rest of different emerging markets. So, or different browser supports, right? People don't, they're like, oh, web, but maybe they won't be comprehensive in all the browsers they support. And if you don't understand the market details, like for instance, in certain markets, certain browsers give free data. And so if you don't understand these nuances, you are not able to leverage you know, what is in that market to attract the cohort that you're trying to cater to in an effective way. So all of these elements as part of your how, you need to ensure that you're paying attention to these things to make sure that not just that you can build in a deliberate and a successful way that is extensible and flexible to scale as market conditions change, but that you're able to create a sort of parity of experiences across your different markets so that you don't have these biases or perception of a first-class citizen market, right? Like if you really look at it, you'll see a lot of times people in the emerging market will say, oh yeah, you know, well, US or, you know, UK, Europe, they're the first class citizens. They get everything and it works nicely for them and everything. And for us, we kind of get the leftovers, the light versions, and we don't get the full functionality. Like that's why you need to be deliberate about your infrastructural intelligence. It's really important to really spend time on laying down infrastructure that caters to the global footprint as a part of the strategy versus trying to do it as an afterthought. Many of the issues I have seen in terms of poor user adoption outside of America, North America, is around performance, account management and access, lack of language support and relevant content for the market. So these should be part of your product vision and roadmap from day one, right? Versus marketing aspects once the product has launched. Okay, so next slide. Positioning. Yes, not really a word that we use a lot on the product management side, but I think positioning is something people really underestimate. And it's quite a bit, it factors quite a bit if you're going to have a successful entrance into the market. While the product manager is mostly not the person at the forefront doing a lot of the positioning work, it's really important that you have, depending on the type of product you're building, you have the key players in order for you to position correctly, whether it be stakeholder management in government entities, NGOs, through your public policy arm, you know, to make sure that you're well received in this part of the world. All of these things need to be intact, right? Because if these are not, you know, and you don't have a positive brand and you don't have the support of the ecosystem in that market, it becomes increasingly difficult for your product to succeed, right? So your strategy, even though as you're coming up with your product vision, don't just talk about the product, but really focus on creating a positive ripple effect for your company as a whole in that market and really create a comprehensive story, because markets tend to look at that. They don't just look at a feature or product. They look at the company in its entirety and what it brings as a whole to the market. So always be looking at, as you're developing your products, what is that positioning story for you? It's super essential for a positive experience for your product and your brand in that market. So as you develop your product roadmap, this should be a parallelized effort, really looking at your positioning strategy with your, you know, the various teams within your organization to proactively discuss and begin to lay the foundations ahead of you entering into that market. These should not be an afterthought. It could really make or break your success in the market, regardless of if your product is just a delightful, a brilliant thing. Because when these are not, if positioning is not done right, you could just incur roadblock after roadblock from trying to launch your product to adoption to success. So again, when you have proximity in these markets and you have people on ground, they can really help to ensure the right actions are taken and the right relationships are developed to pave the way for the product. Next slide, please. Okay, so we go to feedback. feedback is a gift. Whether you like it or not, feedback is a gift. And it's super important that we ensure that there are robust feedback channels, as everything we do in product, as you all know, is never 100% guaranteed. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, we, again, because we build locally in America and then ship globally, we've thought about customer support for a, you know, time zone, the America time zone. Okay, when you go globally, you really need a 24/7 time zone enriched kind of support strategy. So how you engage with customers and address issues quickly across the globe, right? Again, you don't want to have a bias of a first-class citizen, quick SLA for America versus the other parts of the world. So you really have to figure out how you show up in the market and ensure that they know that you're listening and that you care and you want the product to continue to improve and do better. This is super important. No one expects perfection. People are very, you've got a great brand and the product is great. They're very forgiving. But if you don't have a mechanism to engage with your customers in a time zone friendly way, in a very robust way that is at parity with other parts of the globe so that people don't go into a comparison situation, this could be a real deterrent for continuing to use your product and creating a positive impression of the company brand. So the market is going to continue to change. That is given. So so must we. So must the product. So must the product management work that we do. So, you know, this feedback channel is not just to ensure that the experience remains good, but it also unlocks more opportunities when we really do this right. So feedback, again, should be a critical part of your setup. Talking about specifically, how does this work across time zones? And how do we put, you know, the human in the middle, whatever human capacity you need, how do you do this in an actual time zone friendly manner with coverage that is adequate to meet your SLAs and create a great customer sort of support ecosystem? And last but not least, next slide is modify. So of course, every PM knows that we continue to refine and reiterate on all these steps that I talk about to make the product work for the market. So flexibility is key. The world is an ever-changing place with different needs through different time periods. And the best products I've seen always rise to the challenge and adapt to ensure the customer's needs are continually met through the changes. So this, again, requires a growth mindset, but you also need to have factored in and created a very flexible and extensible infrastructure. So when I referred back previously in the how about infrastructure intelligence, that is super critical to enable you to be able to adapt quickly and innovate when needed. So there you have it. These are kind of the key points that I want you guys to really, you know, sort of chew on and think about when you're saying you're building a global product. A lot of the times, like I said, people build a product and then ship it globally. As you see from my personal vision, I'm all about connecting the world and making the world a much more connected and delightfully experienced place for majority of people. And so you really have to factor that in and be deliberate and intentional of how you set up to build your product from day one to be global. And with that, that is the end. That is it from my end. I will open it up for any questions or anything that I can shed light on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Okay, well, we have some time for some questions. I'll go ahead and stop sharing my screen. So yes, feel free to unmute yourself and ask any questions that you may have.
Sure, can I go or we have someone? All right, cool. Hi, I'm Pratik, and I have a question. I mean, it's technically a conundrum to a point where you mentioned about research and choose your cohorts wisely, right? But when you're building for a global product, and if your audience is so diverse, obviously there would be certain top five or six cohorts which are very important strategically for an organization. But then we may learn certain insights through research and things like that. But how do you go about validating that one insight of a cohort is really applicable to at least, let's say, 30-40% of generalistic population as well? Because when we need to ship any feature or product, it has been perceived as a feature which is delivered across the world. So obviously, just from a product delivery perspective, we cannot afford to build a feature which is very cohort specific, unless and until it's very lucrative and a niche cohort, obviously. But how you go about with this trade-off that, okay, I have a certain insight. Can I build or generalize that insight so that I can probably solve for a problem on a generalistic level rather than that cohort specific level?
That's a great question, Pratik. So I feel like there are certain use cases that are foundational to be able to sort of interact like with a product overall. I'll give you an example. So let's say it's about language, right? Let's say you're building in a multi-language situation. So where, you know, there has to be, in terms of how you build a product, the features that are going to be leveraged across different regions, because they're kind of like a general use case to be able to deliver your golden part scenario. And then there are specific customizations on top of it that may be applicable to a certain market, which can be it could be a customized setting that only shows up depending on locale, right? So if it is a situation where you get an insight from a cohort, such as that you are able to experiment and see, is this something that isn't cohort specific, but it's something that would be applicable to a much more wider base of people that need to be able to accomplish this kind of a use case, right? Those are the kinds of first questions I would be asking my team, which is, okay, language, right? If we're working in India, for instance, I know it's a multi-language country. And so the ability to be able to have an experience where I can go between multiple languages, maybe in India, they will use it more frequently, but I also know there are other markets that would appreciate the ability to have an auto translation between languages, even if they're in an English only basis, because it gives them a much richer experience to interact with content they probably wouldn't have been able to. So in the India market, it's a critical feature for them to accomplish. Whereas in another market, it could be a delighter feature. And so those are the kinds of how I would look at the insight. It's like, well, I need it in India, but it could also, it could be a delighted situation in my American market, because now I position it as, wow, you're American, you only speak English, not to worry. You have this auto translation. So you can still go globally and interact and look at content from other parts without having to understand the language. So these are the kinds of things, this is how I would play with the insight.
Thank you very much for answering that. I have another follow-up question with the very same thing. You did mention about having a base kind of a feature and then having a cohort-specific customization on top of it, which you can probably, right, if you want, you can go deep. But then how this can tie up with the product delivery side of things as well? Because I understand this may incur a lot of cost in terms of development, in terms of rollout, in terms of the go-to-market strategy as well. Any thoughts or opinion on that, how to manage that sort of a rollout strategy for this kind of customizations?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great question. And there isn't an easy like, oh, it's simple, just do X, Y, and Z. From my experience there, you know, from an infrastructure perspective, I think it's really important to give autonomous teams, especially if you're able to have them in market focused on specific areas of your product, the ability to go in and own a certain locally relevant experience for that market. And so from sort of like your back end, if you modularize it in a way that you have autonomous teams that are owning separate parts, then you do have to still incur the cost of integration, regression testing, et cetera, but you're not having the issue of coordinating who does what. And you have the ability to expose, create logic that says this only lights up in this market. These are the people that are responsible for it. But it is not easy to build a global product. There are levels of complexity. And so setting up your infrastructure to make it so that it's modularized and extensible and you can have autonomy in who works on what, it will be critical to manage that complexity.
Thank you very much for your answers. It does tie up to a lot of things. Thank you very much.
No problem, Pratik.
Hi, I'm Chaitanya. I have a question. First of all, thanks for this incredible question. It's very insightful. So it is on the similar lines of the thing. when you are actually planning the go-to-market strategy for this kind of global product, the first, what are the prime criteria you decide upon? Which markets to target first for the release or the rollouts?
Okay, so Millie, nice to meet you. I was struggling a little bit to hear what you're saying. Were you saying that how do you prioritize which markets you enter first in terms of your go-to-market strategy?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So, okay, you know, again, this is going to depend on your company objective. If you are looking at, most of the time you're looking at a market, you're looking at the opportunity size there, you're looking at, you know, the total addressable market available to your, for what you're trying to build. You're looking at how much of a market penetration you already have. So, you know, and there are multiple other factors, like the infrastructure in that country. Are they ready to be able to support your product experience? I think you have to sort of look at, dissect the different key markets you're looking at and look across these different criteria to determine the markets that meet the bar in terms of like what you require to have the best product experience. And then obviously there's also like, you know, when you look at a marketing, there's also, you know, in a calendar, the right time to release certain things. But it will really depend on your business objective and the different criteria that your product success depends on. Like, what's the total addressable market? What's the opportunity size? How much market penetration do you already have? What's the competitive landscape? And what is the best time of year to launch? And all those things will help you prioritize, you know, which market, how you go into different markets. And if you do that right, ideally, you know, for instance, let's say you go to sub-Saharan Africa, if you choose a market, like let's say you go to a more populous country, it could actually create a ripple effect and sort of, you have to think about these things with your different stakeholders before you decide how to roll out.
Thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, we do have to, if we have one more quick question, then we can take one more. And if not, we do have to close out pretty soon. So if anyone has one more question, and then we'll go ahead and close it out. Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for attending this this webinar. Thank you so much, Uche, for your insights into the global markets. I think very, very thorough, and I'm sure everyone learned something. So hope everyone has a great day, and we'll have the recording available in the community by next week, and we'll be rebroadcasting this as well so that everyone can get all of the value that you shared with us today. So if you have anything less you want to leave us with, Uche?
Thank you, Nikki. This has been a pleasure. I can be reached on LinkedIn or Twitter at Anuha Yu. So, just wishing everyone luck in their product manager journeys. Cheers.
Thank you so much. And to everyone, have a great rest of your day and stay safe.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.